Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to today's Issues. Before we get to Steve Paisley Jordahl, good morning slash good afternoon, Steve.
Good morning slash afternoon, everybody.
I want to make mention of the fact that October 17th at 6 p.m. Central Time, we will be releasing our latest AFA at Home, Episode 6. The title of the episode, by the way, it was, they videoed this yesterday afternoon. What direction will America take on Election Day 2024? Hosted by Walker Wildman, one of our vice presidents. And the guests include Sandy Rios, Dr. Jameson Taylor, Philip Jaragi, Debbie Wethnow. Both Philip and Debbie were on the program with us yesterday. And then also Rick Green of Patriot Academy. And the conversation, in his conversational style, they will discuss and answer questions about the upcoming election. We're all trending in that direction, November 5th. Topics of conversation, what went wrong in 2020, what's at stake as a Christian in the upcoming election, what states will the election come down to, how important is it for voters to become educated on candidates and showing up to vote, all those kind of questions and more were discussed yesterday. So if you're interested in watching this, it will be available to watch free of charge at our own streaming platform, stream.afa.net, stream.afa.net. That release date will be October 17th. It's being handled by American Family Studios and cleaned up a little bit at 6 p.m. And that's available free of charge at the streaming platform. I don't know how long, a few days, a week or whatever, and then it will go behind the paywall. But for a little while anyway, it'll be available free. So you want to check that out October 16th at 6 p.m. Central Time, stream.afa.net.
Hey, real quick, by the way, Tim, Ed, Wesley, and now Steve Paisley, Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning.
Just real quick about this, because it got some comedy play, talking about Trump claiming last night during the debate that the Haitian immigrants in Ohio were eating people's pets. Ha, ha, ha. The broader point here and the more serious point is, what in the world are 20,000, is that what they say?
Right.
Illegal immigrants being settled in a small a relatively small town in Ohio for?
Yeah.
Where did these folks come from?
Well, my understanding is, you know, Haiti went through all that turmoil.
Yes.
And so I think it was only a couple thousand were, and I'm not sure how they got there.
They're bused in.
But then I think what happens is they call up friends or whatever and say, hey.
It's working out here.
It's working out here. But 20,000, that's incredible.
Is that true?
It's 20,000 since 2022. So
yes.
over about a 2.5 year period of time, there's been 20,000.
Okay, these folks must have received political asylum.
I'm guessing,
Steve.
Yeah.
We did ask or grant asylum to a whole lot of Haitians. Haiti is in turmoil. It's in chaos.
And has been as long as it's been in existence.
At least since the earthquake back.
And will be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of those were brought in. We flew them in under an asylum program specifically for Haiti.
And now they're settling them in this Springfield, Ohio.
You know, I don't know why they picked that town, but just like the Somalis seem to pick someplace in Minnesota, the Twin Cities, you get a couple people and they bring their friends, and all of a sudden you got a little community set up, a Haitian community. And
hey, listen, if I'm a Haitian, sign me up for that trip.
Right.
I want out of that country. That country is it's the Wild Wild West.
Right.
It's a danger.
Very violent.
I encourage people to look this story up that we're talking about, because there's video after video of the locals over the last year and a half or two meeting with city councils and having town halls, and they are thoroughly upset. Not have nothing to do with an immigrant moving in. It's the destruction that they bring with them that they're having a problem with.
It's not fair to any town, especially one of 60,000. Look, New York's struggling.
Yeah.
Big as New York is. It's not fair to say to a town of 60,000, oh, here you go. Here's 20,000 people that don't even know how to talk your language.
Yep.
So anyway. All right, Steve, what do you got?
Well, just one thing that I would add to whatever you guys are talking about at the debate, and I was doing a lot of stuff the first hour, putting stuff together for this half hour, so I didn't hear everything you guys said, but there was a snap poll that CBS did immediately following – I'm sorry, CNN did immediately following the debate. And within 10, 15, 20 minutes of the debate, they asked, did this move the dial for you? In terms of your voting, how are you going to vote? 82% of people polled said it didn't affect their vote in the least. 14% said it made them reconsider, but they did not change their mind. They will not change their mind. 4% said the voting intentions have changed.
How many?
4%.
Did they say in which direction?
Because of the debate. Well, I'm guessing not a whole lot of people. No, it didn't say which direction. I'll just say that, yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I figured. I was texting with somebody last night after the debate was over, and they said, do you think this moved the needle with anybody? And I said, no. I said, maybe 5% of the American public at the most would have been influenced by the debate last night in terms of, I'm undecided. I think I'll go with Trump, or I think I'll go with Harris because of the debate. I just don't think that happened last night. I think a couple things that are kind of the takeaways. One is Harris didn't fall on her face.
Yep. Right.
Like a lot of people expected her to do. So that helps her. But the second thing is, and Trump emphasized this again and again, and I don't know how much this matters to the general American voting public, but I think it's going to be one of the top issues. She did not answer at all, nor was she forced to. Answer for the Biden-Harris doing away with our southern border and allowing millions and millions and millions of people to come in here to our country. We're going to feel this for a long time. You're going to feel this for a long, long time, and it's going to become a problem with these gangs rising up in big, especially in bigger cities.
Yep.
I mean, it's going to be a real – it may – you know, you may not feel the impact immediately now, but it's going to be – although New York, Boston, Denver, you can ask Chicago, these people.
They're feeling it now.
But I'm just telling you, she was not made, in my opinion, to be accountable for that that role. Because remember, Biden took away every tool that Trump was using to stop illegal immigration into our country. Because he felt it was immoral. Remember, border walls are immoral.
Right. Cages.
We need to pay for the. Remember, Biden, all of them, they said we need to pay for all their. If people come here illegally, we got to pay for all their health care and housing. Remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, this. But she was never forced last night, at least in the 90s.
Trump tried. He did. He did on several occasions.
He tried. But that's my couple of takeaways from last night. Go ahead, Steve.
Today is 9/11. The anniversary, 23rd anniversary of 9/11. And I wanted to just take a second to go a little bit back to the day, listen to a little bit of what happened that day. And I've got some comments from Dr. Robert Jeffers about some aftermath, some things that happened in the wake of 9/11. But if you will remember, at 8:46 a.m., United Airlines Flight 11 hit the first tower. Everybody thought it was a tragic accident, that somebody had gone off course, and the tower was on fire, but they had no idea until 9:03, when United Airlines 175 hit the second tower, and on NBC it sounded something like this. Cut 16.
Many people in the building.
Oh, another one just hit. Something else just hit. A very large plane just flew directly over my building, and there's been another. Collision. Can you see it? I can see it on this shot.
Oh, my.
Something else has just...
You know
just,
what? We just saw a plane circling the building.
And indeed, that was a shock to everybody. That's about the time that people started figuring out that this wasn't just a tragic accident in Manhattan.
Right.
And then at 9:37, Flight 77 hit the Pentagon. And this is how NBC News found out or covered that. Cut 17.
Taken next.
David, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're looking at live pictures of the Pentagon where there is billowing smoke. Jim Mikliszewski just reported that he heard an explosion. And right now we're looking at an aerial view of the Pentagon. Mick, can you talk to us?
Officially, nobody knows exactly what happened. I think the picture is pretty clear. According to one U.S. Army officer who went running past me at a full trot, he said that it appears that a bomb was detonated at the heliport.
It was, in fact, an airplane. It was American Airlines Flight 77 that crashed into the Pentagon. At 9:59, the South Tower of the World Trade Center came down, and the North Tower came down at 10:28. At 10:03, United Airlines Flight 93 crashed into the field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That was the Todd Beamer, let's roll, right, heroism. That was what was happening on the day. And it's always good for me to go back and kind of relive some of that. We say never forget, but sometimes to feel that again. Today in New York, they had what they do annually is they get together, they read the names of all of the people who lost their lives in 9/11. This is just a couple names from today. Cut 18.
Gregory M. Preziose.
Wanda Evelise Prince.
Vincent A. Princiota.
Kevin M. Pryor.
Everett Martin Proctor III.
Carrie Beth Progen.
David Lee Prum.
And then on at 8:46, they ring a bell. 9:03 at the markers, they ring a bell that morning. It was interesting. Both Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and I can't remember the name of the Democrat vice president candidate.
Tim Walz
was there. It was a really funny picture of Trump and Vance on one side, Biden and Harris on another, and right between them was a very miserable-looking Michael Bloomberg. Oh, man, he looked like he was being skewered. So after 9/11, do you guys remember the weeks following 9/11 and what was happening in our churches?
Yeah, they were full.
They were.
Yeah.
I asked Dr. Jeffress yesterday, Dr. Robert Jeffress of First Baptist Dallas, a little bit about that. Let's really hear what he had to say, because 15.
Anytime there is a disaster, there is a realization by many people that there are forces at work that are greater than our capacity individual to confront. And I think we instinctively turn toward God. I think that turn is real, but it's also historically very short-lived. Our history as a country is filled with examples of momentary turns toward God, whether it was the crash of Wall Street in 1929 or the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Interesting that we find the need for God when something, you know, horrific happens in our country or in our lives, happens individually as well. As soon as things look better, we all of a sudden forget that God exists.
You know, I don't read a lot into either the tendency for people to turn towards God or the fact that when they suddenly feel safe again or they, quote unquote, get over the initial scare, they turn away from God. I don't read a lot into that because those things are not sufficient to convert a person. Okay, so people will turn temporarily towards God, and sometimes it's whoever they think God is, because they are looking for assurance. Their lives suddenly are chaotic, and they're not sure what the future holds. There's a great deal of insecurity. They're looking for something secure, so often they'll turn to the church, quote-unquote, or to God. But that's not enough to save. It's kind of like Romans 1, where people will see and understand that God is real because of the creation that they're seeing, okay? But that's not enough to convert. The gospel is the only power that can convert people. So churches need to be preaching the gospel so that when people temporarily come
because of some disaster, then God can minister the message of salvation and the power to convert hearts. So I understand what Dr. Jeffress is saying. Anytime people go to church, that's a good thing. That's an opportunity. Let me put it that way.
But how sad and how tragic that some of the people you're talking about who are kind of going seeking something they don't know what, and then they kind of relent after a while and stop coming. They came that close,
right,
to hearing the gospel and maybe making a decision that would permanently change their eternity.
Well, listen, there were people, the majority of people, who heard the literal Jesus Christ preaching, saw miracles, all right, and turned away and rejected him and called for him to be crucified. So this is typical of fallen human beings.
There was a scene in a movie, and I can't remember what movie it was, and I don't think I ever saw the movie in its entirety, so I can't endorse it, but it's so old, I don't think you can probably even find it, but it was a Burt Reynolds movie. We're talking 70s now.
Black and white.
No, Wesley, we did have color.
And I was serious.
I know you were.
Y'all all laughed.
No, it was in color, and that's about the time we got indoor plumbing here in Mississippi, the rest of the country already had.
Right. Thank you, TVA.
But anyway, then along came something called Kabel TV.
Kabel,
You remember Kabel TV?
Oh, yeah.
Came into existence?
Yeah.
To y'all's point, it was a scene in the movie where Burt Reynolds' character is like, he's out in the open sea with no land in sight. And he's like, some kind of flotation, a log or something. And he starts praying to God that he would save him and bring him to land.
Yeah.
So he says, I think I've got this scene right. He says, God, if you'll save me, I'll give you everything I own. Okay? I'll give you everything I own. Well, the next scene, I think, is him seeing land or getting closer to the land. And he says, God, thank you for saving me, and I'm going to give you half of everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This wasn't a Christian movie or a spiritual point to be made. It was supposed to be comedy. But it does say when oftentimes we take the good times for, if that's what you want to call them, for granted.
Yes.
And when we get into trouble or we have hardship, that's when we, but I almost, that's,
that's fallen, that's fallen human nature.
Okay.
That's fallen human nature. That's one reason why I've said this before. I don't mean to repeat myself, but I'm getting so old I can't remember if I've repeated myself.
Hey, good stuff's worth repeating.
Yes. Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad because you're going to get a lot of repeating from me over the next 5 years.
That's it.
Okay. So this is why I don't make vows to God. All right. The Bible says if you make a vow to God, make sure you pay it back or God will consider you a fool. I don't make vows saying, God, if you do this, I'll do X, Y, or Z,
right,
because I don't trust myself. So I will say, God, I will try to do that. But I don't make vows because you're squeezed under difficult circumstances. You'll promise the moon, even if you can't give it. And so that's funny because that's a movie that recognizes this part of our nature. We will promise God anything to get out of this corner I'm jammed up in. And the fact of the matter is we're untrustworthy. Our fallen nature is untrustworthy.
Burt Reynolds was in a movie called Shark in 1969. Might have been that.
The one you're talking about is The End, 1978.
Wesley's on that 70s.
Oh,
movie.
He's got
I got the screen.
What did you type in the scene I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
But he was if I didn't have this in front of me, that would make the most, that would make sense. Yeah.
So the movie with the scene I'm talking about is called what?
The End.
The End.
That's it.
Okay. But it was, he's out there in the middle of the ocean.
They titled this scene on here on YouTube, I Want to Live.
Right. God, I may have missed it, the verbatim, but that was the point of it. He's saying, God, I'll give you everything if you'll save my life and get me back to land. And the next scene is him walking up on the beach going, God, yeah, I'm going to give you half of everything. Or,
yeah.
Or maybe it gets worse. Maybe he's 50, 20,
probably
50, 25. Lord, I'll give you, God, I'll give you 5%
of it. Folks, please understand, we are not mocking how terrible human beings are in their relationship to God. But that is a funny thing. I'm going to have to watch this clip.
Right.
Because this is, without the grace of God in operation in your life, this is what you get out of humanity.
Right. You know, back to your vow thing for just a moment. So you don't make vows to God.
I don't.
Are you interchanging the word vow with like a promise?
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah. I don't promise God that if he does this, I'm going to do.
Oh, I see X, what y, you're Z. Saying. No, you just, I would say, listen, all through the scripture, the admonition, the commandment for us as followers of Jesus Christ is to live for him 100% every day, all day.
Right. You're right.
And that's not conditional on God doing anything for us or not. Am I right?
I think that's great clarification. I think the other category would be if someone was interested or looking for clarification, a sign. So like, God, if you want me to do this, then show me or whatever.
Yeah, that's different. That's kind of like putting a fleece before the Lord.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's what it's called. But no, you're right. That's Christian. Good. That's why Jesus says, let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Absolutely.
God is not transactional like that. It's
right.
Like it's like a Trump thing, right? God, I'll give you my tower on Fifth Avenue if you let me win the president. Yeah. You know,
it doesn't work that way. Nope. That's not biblical.
Nope. Right.
Now, God does promise that, and this is sometimes hard to define, but God does say that he will take care of his own people.
Yes.
He'll bless them.
He will bless them. But you know what? That's not something to be viewed nonchalantly, so to speak.
Right.
If you read the scriptures about God's relationship to man, there are certain levels of holiness.
Yes.
Okay. So that a new convert is not practice holiness or righteousness or
sanctification.
Or sanctification. That's a process that takes time and years. You can be born again and saved from your sin so that when you die, you go to heaven. But but you compare that to a 50-year believer, you know what I'm saying, who's practiced what God, drawing near to God.
Yes.
That's two different relationships. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that is the process of sanctification as opposed to justification.
Right.
Where God declares us righteous because of our faith and trust in Jesus Christ.
That's an instantaneous moment.
Yes.
Weird. Look out, Robert Jeffers. Because we're bringing it right here. Being saved from your sin, I call it sin, death, and hell. Being saved from that is an instantaneous, in the moment, desire to give your life to Jesus Christ.
Right.
Philippians says, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Right. That's the sanctification process. Yep.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
My pleasure.
Good looking, Paisley.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll see you next time, folks.